live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist.
This episode of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is brought to you by Gorillas Hotels Group, a chain of four hotels in Rwanda, the land of a thousand hills.
And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be. Let me tell you where we happen to be. Get out those maps, boys and girls. As we always do, we tell you those coordinates. 23 degrees, 14 minutes north, 106 degrees, 24 minutes west. We're in Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa in Mexico, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. You just email me your name, phone number, question, or problem to peter at petergreenberg.com, and we'll fix it right here on the air. We'll be doing that throughout the show. Most importantly, I want to give you two news updates. One, of course, is the Southwest Airlines flight, the one that did the diversion on the flight from LaGuardia to Dallas and made the emergency landing in Philadelphia. Great hero pilot on that. Former fighter pilot, by the way, and a she. She did a great job. But the underlying problems are still being addressed. What caused the rapid, almost instantaneous disintegration of the left engine, resulting in one passenger being partially sucked out of the plane and that killed her? She was the fatality on that flight. A number of people were also injured. It represented the first fatality on a plane in the history of Southwest Airlines. And think about this in terms of air safety. The first passenger fatality in the United States since 2009, that terrible Colgan air crash near Buffalo, New York. I mean, think about this. There's some good news here and some sobering news. I'll give you the good news first because there's just a little bit of it. And that is, we're still celebrating the safest era in commercial aviation since commercial aviation began. When you think of only one passenger fatality since Colgan Air in 2009, that's over 9 years ago, that's pretty amazing. Now, could this death have been avoided? Of course. What do we know about that fan blade or engine disintegration? We're learning. But there are some other problems that need to be addressed here. And that is, it gets back to the FAA and proper oversight of what we call MROs, maintenance repair operations. Every airline either has an internal MRO or they outsource it to other states, locations, even countries. And that's where the oversight problem comes in. The FAA neither has the staff nor the resources to send on a regular basis inspectors to those locations. And even when they do, the protocol is absurd. Think about this. If an FAA inspector wants to inspect a maintenance repair operation, they have to, first of all, get permission from internal FAA people to do it, and then they have to alert the MRO with a 7-day notice that they're coming. You think the health department does that before they show up at the restaurant? No. That's the problem here. And because of limited resources and a ridiculously low budget, when that inspector finally does show up, he or she doesn't have enough time to really inspect the work being done. All they can do is to review the paperwork being done. And let's face it, boys and girls, anybody can check off a box and tell you they did something. That doesn't mean anything. Now, having said that, I am not suggesting that airlines or MROs are, you know, intentionally, you know, jeopardizing our safety. However, let's go back to the good news for a second. The safest era in commercial aviation. We're batting almost 1,000. So we know we can't improve on that batting average. The real question is, can we maintain it? And that's the issue here when it deals with MROs. So what's the FAA finally doing? There's something called an airworthiness directive. And there are many forms of an airworthiness directive. One form is a service bulletin that says to an airline, we think you might have a problem with an engine. The next time your plane comes in, why don't you check it? That's the weakest one. Then there's a modified airworthiness directive, which says, we think you have a problem with the engine. Please fix it by May 31st. And then there's the most severe airworthiness directive that essentially grounds the airplane that says, we know there's a problem and you fix it before this plane can fly again. The FAA has always been reluctant to go to the nuclear option because of the economic impact, because the FAA has never realized that they don't work for the airlines. They work for us. But therein lies your problem. They're more worried about economic impact than they are about the reality of the possible problem. So, what have we done in this case? The FAA now has told the airline, in this case Southwest, which flies only one type of equipment, 737, that on those engines, similar to the one that disintegrated on the flight between New York and Dallas, they have to inspect the engines to look for hairline fractures in the fan blades and other parts of the engine cowling and certify that there's nothing there, no fractures, no signs of metal fatigue. But they've given them, I think, until the end of May or June to do it. You know, look, you either fix the problem or you don't. You know, it's one thing to say, we don't know what happened, we're going to investigate. But if you do know what happens and you make a conscious decision to delay the fix or to take your time fixing it, that can, emphasis on the word can, border on criminal negligence. So I know that Southwest Airlines has a great safety culture. I know that Southwest Airlines runs a very safe operation. I know them very well. And I know that Southwest Airlines is going to beat that deadline. But the fact that the FAA just gave them a deadline as opposed to saying fix it now bothers me. I have total faith in Southwest, but I still have my problems with the FAA, and there you have it. Just want to mention that. Now, let's shift gears because I said at the opening, we're in Mazatlan, one of my favorite locations in Mexico. And yet, this has been a pet peeve of mine for quite a while, the U.S. State Department advisory, the new protocol system in place. You know, in the old days, they had State Department advisories. And by the way, the three words State Department advisory is such a negative connotation that people automatically think that when they hear those three words, they're just not going to go. Well, it's been misleading. A lot of people have been misguided and make poor decisions based on fear. Now the State Department has changed the protocol to issue a State Department advisory for every country in the world. And they've divided it into four categories. Category one, travel with normal caution. I have no idea what that means. Category two, travel with increased caution. I'm still confused. Category three, by this time you're digging a hole under a rock, reconsider travel. You know what that means. You're not going to go. And category four, which most of you think is a rule or a law, says do not travel. Well, it's not a rule, and it's not a law, and it's not a regulation. It's an advisory. Now, let's go back and take a look at how they've come up with this. There are now four or five separate states in Mexico, Sinaloa being one of them, by the way, that is listed as a Category 4 by the U.S. State Department. Do not travel. Really? Mazatlan is in the state of Sinaloa. Do I feel unsafe, threatened, or in any danger whatsoever? I do not. And guess what? We're here. We're broadcasting from here. This is my third time this year in Mazatlan with no problems, or as we like to say, no problemo. So, ladies and gentlemen, please do yourself a favor. Not me a favor, yourselves a favor. Read the advisories and then put them in proper context. You know, if there's a crime wave in North Charleston, South Carolina, it doesn't stop me from going to Charleston. We're painting with too broad a brush. And it's not helping anybody. And should we be more aware of our environment? You bet. Should we be more conscious of just basic common sense when you travel? Absolutely. But in my particular case, I depend more on the British Foreign Office advice to their citizens than I do on the U.S. State Department advice to our citizens. That should tell you everything. We'll be back with more from Peter Greenberg Worldwide in Mazatlan right after this.
Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa in Mexico, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And as I do every week at this time, I require you at this point to look at our website, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard work all around the world, opportunities for you to immerse yourself every time you go anywhere and give back to the people who need it the most. And, of course, Mazatlan is no exception of looking at local opportunities. Check out Mazatlan Animal Rescue. This is a dangerous thing for me because I know if I go, I'm going to end up keeping the dog. But they work very closely with the animal sanctuaries here. They provide all the help needed to not only
rescue, rehabilitate, and rehome the Mazatlan street animals, and you can volunteer for a morning, for an afternoon, or for an evening, or a weekend, and you know what's going to happen. You're taking the dog home. But the point is, it's a great opportunity to work with the people who actually live here. And who better to give you a tour of Mazatlan than the locals themselves? Now, moving right along, I've been looking forward to talking to my next guest for quite some time. I've been coming to Mexico since I'm 21. And that was only 3 years ago, but I'm kidding. But he's the Secretary of Tourism in Mexico, in the hot seat in many cases, in terms of the public perception of this country from all over the world, especially America. His name, Enrique de la Madrid, Secretary of Tourism. Welcome.
Peter, thank you for the invitation.
You know, earlier in the show, I've talked about and have gone on CBS and spoken about the State Department advisories, about the new level that they're doing an advisory to all 196 countries. It's no longer selectively applied. But then my argument is that it is selectively applied because there are four different levels. Travel with normal caution. I have no idea what that means,
yeah,
by the way.
There's none.
Travel with increased caution. I'm still confused. Then comes the third category, at which point people are digging a hole, you know, to reconsider travel. And that fourth category, which people think is a rule, a regulation, or a law that says do not travel, and then they don't come. It's not a rule, it's not a regulation, and it's not a law. Now, here we are. We are sitting here in Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa. I don't feel unsafe. I don't feel in any danger. And yet Sinaloa is part of that Category 4 application from the State Department that tells people do not travel, putting Mazatlan, in essence, in the same category as Syria or Yemen or Afghanistan. I'm assuming you have a problem with that.
Well, first of all, in the case of Sinaloa, first of all, you're right. They have these four categories.
Yeah.
The State Department of the U.S., what they argue is that this is a legal obligation on their behalf. And from the Mexican point of view, well, first of all, what we take it seriously. Why? Because 60% of the foreigners that come into Mexico come from the USA. So we have to, we have to recognize that is an issue.
And your numbers have been strong for a long time.
And the numbers have been amazing. At least for the last 5 years, we have been growing at a close to 12 percent annual growth rate.
That in itself is staggering.
That is amazing. I think we are the country that has grown the most of the 10 most important tourism countries. We're the country that has grown the most for the last 5 or 6 years. And that is why we have been advancing from the 15th most visited country in the world to number 8. In the year 2016, and probably we move two more places than the year 2017.
Now, don't move too fast, because then they'll be victim of over-tourism. Be careful.
Well, we're still far away from that, but you're right. We have to work on that. So, yes, we're concerned, but what I also want to stress is in this last warnings from the State Department, basically all the tourist destinations were no subject to any alert. Specifically in the case of Mazatlan, they made an exception. They say, well, you know, Sinaloa has some issues,
right,
but Mazatlan as a tourism area has an exception.
It's one thing to make an exception. It's another thing for the optics and the perception of travelers. They don't necessarily make that distinction.
What I usually say when I go to the States is that we have to make a difference among the criminal rates or indexes that appear from a state or a country. For example, you can talk about the crime rate in Chicago or the crime rate in Washington.
Well, if we applied the State Department metrics to the city of Chicago, I'm not going to Illinois.
Well, that will be the natural conclusion. Nonetheless, as tourists, we know that we will not be visiting the areas where many of those crimes are taking place.
Right.
The same is in Mexico. You can get some numbers of what is happening in a state, but you as a tourist will not be visiting those areas, and so you're not at risk.
I mean, I don't know how many Americans are not visiting Nuevo Laredo. I mean, that's really not what we're talking about here. You know, when you talk about Puerto Vallarta, Acapulco, Mazatlan, I don't feel unsafe or in any sort of danger in any of those places.
And you're totally right. I mean, we think that in Mexico, in general, is a safe country, and we're doing all we can in our hands to really guarantee not only safety, but you really to have a great experience and to come back. Mazatlan, by the way, is one of the destinations, the most typical traditional places in Mexico. And because of the tianguis, it is also a great opportunity for them to renew their infrastructure. So you have been traveling around this city.
Oh, no, because of tianguis, I mean, Mazatlan got its act together.
It is. And it's amazing because it's a very nice place.
And by the way, for my audience, tianguis is probably the largest convention or conference of travel ever in Mexico.
Correct. Right. And we have it once a year. We have it 1 year in Acapulco, 1 year somewhere else. And this year it was Mazatlan. And again, the case is Mazatlan is a very Mexican destination with a colonial area, no, which is also renewed.
Which they've done
amazing restoration. And you have also amazing food, and it's an amazing place to visit.
Well, let's go back to something that happened even more recently, and that was the State Department automatic warning about Playa del Carmen. Yes, you had an explosion on a boat there. Yes, the government authorities actually found another bomb and defused it, right? And the next thing you know, the State Department is telling all essential personnel, don't go.
Well, it's amazing because
And they lifted it, didn't they?
And they lifted it. First, we worked it. We take it seriously. We work with them. We give them information. But I also have the impression that in Mexico, a different standard is applied to us. Because you see, for example, I read the news of the states every day.
Well, can I go back to something which I think you'll appreciate? In the old days, before they had 196 travel advisories, and they only applied them selectively, in all those years when the Middle East was blowing up, Northern Ireland never had a State Department travel advisory, and they were getting blown up every day. Mm-hmm. So I would call that a selective application.
I think there's a little bit of that. And also, again, I think that the standards that apply to Mexico are higher, which is fine. But we see so many news of things.
Let's stop. You said it's fine. Is it really fine?
Come on. It's not fine. It's not fine. Because what happened is that they apply a different... They send a signal that traveling to Mexico is dangerous. But if we apply the same criteria, again, to traveling to Las Vegas, to traveling to San Antonio, to traveling to Miami, to traveling to Washington, Americans wouldn't be traveling through the U.S. And we know that it's not the case.
I remember when President Calderon was in office, the Texas Department of Public Safety issued an alert. I've never heard one from a Texas Department of Public Safety. I didn't even know they had safety in Texas, but that's another story.
But
the alert that they said was no spring breakers should go to Mexico because they'll be shot.
But let me give you some numbers, which also probably put the things into perspective. Again, we are growing at a 12% annual growth rate of American visitors to Mexico during the last 6 years. The number of Mexicans traveling to the U.S. has been reduced. And not only the number of Mexicans, but also many foreigners traveling to the U.S.
The numbers, I don't know if you've seen the most recent numbers, are down between 7 and 9%, yeah. which is huge.
So I think that probably some of those messages do not always make sense. And at the end of the day, also many Mexicans traveling to the U.S. is good business for Americans. Close to 20 million Mexicans go to the United States every year. And according to the Department of Trade, of Commerce, we spend close to $20 billion in the U.S. So it's good business for both countries.
Muchos pesos.
Muchos pesos, muchos dólares.
But here's the thing. We had a situation, you're so much on the radar in terms of the worst four-letter word that starts with F, which is fear, that you have a family in a tragic death situation in a condo, which had nothing to do with terrorism. It had nothing to do with criminal behavior. It was negligent on the part of the owner of that apartment. They died because of a natural gas leak. That could have happened in Des Moines, Iowa.
And it's an accident. I mean, and that's an accident. And it could happen. Again, I think that sometimes they apply a different standard to us. But we're working on that. And we're also working, for example, we recently went to the U.S. We went to Los Angeles, to New York, to Chicago, to reach also the Mexican-American community.
Which is huge.
35 million Mexican-Americans live in the United States.
Are you telling me we let you in?
Absolutely, and you let us out also. Which is the way it should be. And what we're doing, we're inviting also that segment of the American market to come into Mexico with this program that we called Let's All Travel Through Mexico, Viajemos Todos por México. That was a program that was launched 2 years ago in Mexico, especially for Mexicans traveling to Mexico.
To come back home.
But now we're doing that also with Mexican-American community. We're working on our security, we're working on the destinations, and we're willing for more Americans to continue to fly down into Mexico.
Now, of course, I'll be devil's advocate here for a second. It's your job to do that. It's your, it's to promote Mexico.
Of course.
Yes, but the reality numbers—that's my job to separate the promotion from the reality. Mm-hmm. And my argument has been all along: I don't have a problem.
Absolutely.
And if you take a look at people and the satisfaction scores of people who come down to Mexico and return home, most of those people who are Americans who are coming to Mexico aren't coming for the first time; they're repeat visitors.
Absolutely. I was just having my breakfast some time ago. And I was talking with someone that was next to me. You see the service they provide here in Mexico? Yeah. It's not only the food. It's not only the arts and crafts. It's not only the places. It's the way people treat other people. And that is very characteristic of Mexicans. And that is one of our most powerful strengths.
We're speaking with Enrique de la Madrid, the Secretary of Tourism here in Mexico. Stick with me, Mr. Secretary. When we come back, I'm going to talk about another wall and another bridge. Back right after this.
Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Mazatlan in Mexico. We've been speaking with Enrique de la Madrid, the Secretary of Tourism of Mexico. You know, I go back to President Trump's, actually before he was even president, the day he announced for president, he was knocking Mexicans. His very first statement from in 2015 was calling Mexicans rapists and murderers and talking about building the wall. I recently came back from Tijuana, where I didn't see a wall, I saw a bridge. And how many people are now using that bridge to go across the border, Americans, to go across the border and fly out of the Tijuana airport, which most people don't realize you can get anywhere from there. You can even fly to China from the Tijuana airport and save a lot of money in the process.
It's an amazing success.
The Mexicans are happy. The San Diegans are happy. Americans are happy.
It's amazing because you, as an American in the South San Diego, you can document your luggage and their tickets. You cross a bridge and you're in Mexican
soil.
And by
the way, the bridge, I think, is 900 feet.
And it's marvelous. It's beautiful.
You're in the airport.
It's modern. It's very nice. I think it's. I do not know of other places where you really have an international airport at serving both countries at the same time. It's amazing.
Well, one of the big surprises there, it's your airline called Volaris, because their business model was really built for Mexicans. It wasn't built for Americans, but the smart Americans are taking advantage
of it. Correct.
They built the Mexican model to basically compete against bus fares. So you can fly Guadalajara to New York for $63. So why wouldn't you cross the bridge? I mean, I'm not on the plane for the rich Corinthian leather. I'm not on the plane for the wine list. I mean, it's a great value now.
And this is also happening because I understand that the airport in San Diego can also not grow anymore. It's limited.
No. When you take off in the airport, listen, I don't know if you know this, Mr. Secretary, but the approach to San Diego Airport is the steepest approach of any airport in the United States. Yeah. You're flying over Balboa Park, and if you look out the left side of the window, you can actually see what the people are eating for lunch in their hotel room. They have no more room to grow. Right. How they're even able to accommodate the plane sizes that they're flying is amazing to me. But you're right. They don't have capacity.
And so that is why, as you said before, we do not believe in walls. We believe in bridges. We believe that we're neighbors. We believe that both countries have different development status, but we're trying to do our best to become a better country, a country that is especially where people live better. And that's our struggle. And for example, after we signed the free trade agreement with the U.S., I think that both countries are better off, irrespective of what some politicians say, we're better off.
Who would those politicians be?
Well, you know who they are. You know who they are. And this is just rhetoric, because it's not the truth. The truth is that
the numbers speak louder.
Well, yes, and that trade helps people. What I also understand, this is mainly focus, and we are sensitive to that, to some people that have not really benefited from globalization. And that is also true. And we in the world all have to do our best to be more inclusive about everyone. We cannot just leave people behind. And those are the people that think that someone can take them back to the past, that they can give security back to them. And that is the political offer they're making, which is totally untrue. It is not something that cannot be done.
You know, you're in the midst of a political election here in Mexico, and I was amazed the other day to see what can get all the candidates together in one room. And your president did it. He got every candidate who probably disagrees on everything to come into the room and agree on one thing, the wall.
Yeah, we are a very, as everyone, we're a very nationalistic country. And we believe that we're doing our best to become a better place to be, to a better place for everyone. And of course, we totally disagree with all those type stereotypes that are trying to put on Mexicans, which is not, it's totally untrue. And by the way, that Mexicans that go to the U.S. usually are the most proactive, the people that are risk takers, and they do pretty well in the United States, and there are people that are law-abiding. So it is totally untrue what they say about them, and we as a country also have to defend the right to try to look for them for themselves. But we believe, again, in bridges. We do not believe in walls. We know that at the end of the day, we're better off if we work together as a region. We can be the most competitive region in the world. For whom? For a population, for Americans, Canadians, and Mexicans.
And let's face it, if you look at the geography of it, it's one landmass. I mean, who are you kidding?
It's amazing. Sometimes you can just have a legal border, but we have energy reserves that are common. The population on the south states of the United States and the north of Mexico is close to 90 million people. If it were a country, it would be one of the largest countries in the world and also the richest. And the people in the border are very much seeing themselves as a common population. So, again, we will continue to struggle to strengthen our relationships and to have goodwill on both sides of the border.
Now, speaking of those population numbers, what you live and die by is airlift, right?
Absolutely.
That's part of your mandate.
It is.
And how are you going to get more airlift? So, for example, we're in Mazatlan right now. You need better airlift here, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
They're flying little baby planes in here. And they're all full, but there's demand.
Well, we had this bilateral agreement that we signed with the American
open
administration.
Open skies?
We already had it. We signed it in August of last year. Yeah. Previous to that, you could only have two American flights and two Mexican flights, for example, flying from Los Angeles to Mazatlan. Now that is open. Now that is free. And the amount of flights growing on both sides of the border is amazing. Again, that is what we need. We need more flights, and we need also better infrastructure. But you're right. I mean, 80% of the income that we receive from foreigners are from those that travel by flight. So for us, connectivity and airlines are basic.
And then what you really need is connectivity within the country, because it's not just a singular destination that you're looking at, right? People aren't just going to fly to Mazatlan if they can also fly to Cabo.
Absolutely.
Right? They can do both.
And that is why we're now investing in this administration. We're investing in this new international airport in the city of Mexico. Why? Because the one we have
is... Toluca?
The one that is in Texcoco.
Ah.
The new project. Remember that the one we have now in Mexico City is 65 years old.
Huh? Oh, believe me, I've landed it.
You've seen it. And it's time to have a new one. We are already constructing the new one that should be open the year 2022.
Mr. Secretary, stay with me. We've got one more segment to do with you, because I've got another question that you're not even going to expect. How about that? Back right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you in Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa in Mexico. We've been speaking with Enrique de la Madrid, the Secretary of Tourism for the country of Mexico. Mr. Secretary, we've already dealt with the walls. We've already dealt with the bridges. We've already dealt with airlift. We've already dealt with the State Department advisories, which I'm going to continue to deal with because I'm not finished with them yet. But now let's talk about smoke. And that is... You're seeing right now in the United States, state after state after state. It used to be just for medicinal purposes. That's gone now. They're now legalizing marijuana. Drugs has always been an issue on cross-border politics. Here's a situation where you have Colorado and the state of Washington and the state of California and more states every day, right? And yet it's about an unequal application of the law, right? So where do you stand on all that?
Well, first of all, just to make the point, this is a personal opinion, because
yes.
I do not necessarily, my opinions are not necessarily shared by the people from the Mexican government. So this is a personal opinion. After studying the issue of security, basically in tourist destinations, but also seeing what is happening in the United States, I believe that there should be the legalization of marijuana for recreational purposes. The first reason why this should be the case is because this is a natural right. I mean, the state should not be deciding about your styles of life.
And yet right now, individual states are the ones that are actually voting to decriminalize it.
Because in the case of the United States, what they're basically recognizing is that it is the right of each individual to decide which type of life you want to have, as long as you do not affect other people's lives.
Sure.
And that is the case
of
marijuana.
Which, by the way, is no different than alcohol. You can still be driving under the influence of marijuana and get into an accident. So you still have to be doing it responsibly.
Absolutely. So, I mean, first, it's a legal perspective. I believe that individuals have the right to decide about the way about their own lifestyle. But the second, I believe that there is a relationship between penalization or criminalization of marijuana and drugs and violence in my country. When I was recently in California and I was speaking with the legislators and asked them why did they legalize or depenalize marijuana, they told me because of violence. And yes,
they could actually do a cross relationship and decide that by decriminalizing it, the violence level is going
down. Yes, because what you're basically doing today, you are giving the criminal organizations, you're giving them a business for themselves. And with that money, they buy...
Not taxed.
They buy arms. They are able to really pay money to public officials and to be violent. So the way I believe is let's try to take some money of them from them away. Let's make legal businesses, let them pay taxes, and also let's use some of that investment and some resources for prevention, for education. Because I'm not supporting the use of drugs. What I'm against is the criminalization of drugs.
You know, my issue is somebody vacations in Colorado and then decides to fly to Phoenix, they get arrested.
Which is absolutely absurd. And also, I do not believe that those people are better off. I also do not believe that the jails are a good place to be educated. In the worst case scenario,
they're a place to be educated,
but not the education you want. In crime, no? And
yeah,
I believe that security is such an important issue that we should use our officials for real things, no, for kidnapping, for violence, for homicides, not for people that are using drugs.
The other issue, which is not a Mexican issue at all, it's the United States issue, which affects Mexico, is how many gun stores line the border between Arizona, Texas, and Mexico.
Thousands.
It's unbelievable.
Thousands. And that is why this has been so ironical, because we know, as in everywhere in the world, but the U.S., there's a huge demand for drugs. So what happens? Well, the markets tend to certify them. Some of them come from Mexico. Then we get from the United States money, cash that comes back, smuggled. And then also with that money, people can buy arms basically everywhere in the United States. And so that's why
they have proxies to buy it. They can put 25 guns in their car and drive it across.
And that is creating a huge amount of violence.
Wow.
And also that is why we also believe that it's unfair when people say that we're not doing our best. Thousands of people have been killed in Mexico precisely pursuing the attack against drugs.
The good news, if there's any consolation news, is the gang violence is against other gangs. Americans have not been targeted.
And that is the case. That is why, and that's a good point, Peter. When people listen and read about the criminal rates, it's usually among gangs. So, and that is why it is not going to be affecting them if they go to basically to the touristic areas. It's not going to be affecting them. It's not for them.
Although the visual images are powerful and send the wrong message.
Absolutely. You're right. But it's not. That's a perception. That is not the reality.
Enrique de la Madrid, the Secretary of Tourism of Mexico, thank you for being part of my gang today. See how I segue? Was that good?
That was absolutely good.
And I look forward to seeing you again. Thank you again for doing this, because most of the time, you know, it's not about just promoting tourism. It's about explaining it. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Back with more from Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa, where I'm still safe and not feeling in danger, right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Mazatlan in Mexico, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. My next guest, I've been a fan of all of his work for so many years, and in particular, well, I want to tell you in particular in a second, talk about globalization. There are very few places you can go right now that have any significance in my life that don't have a Cirque du Soleil show, and which is a great challenge, but also a great reflection of what you're able to do. Daniel Lamar, the president and CEO of Cirque du Soleil, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now that I've said this, I have to tell you my favorite show.
Which one?
It might surprise you. Ka. And I'll tell you why. Because the stage is the star. It's one of those things where I go at least once a year. I'm crazy. I will go just to see the stage.
My kind of a fan.
Yeah, of course. But seriously, the idea that you would actually get a chance to build the show before you actually build the stage before you built the show.
Yeah.
And then the stage is the star because it does things I've never seen a stage do.
Can you only imagine for a moment us going to MGM and tell them, we're going to do this amazing show, and by the way, there will be no stage. There will be only a huge void.
Right.
You can only imagine, you know, how skeptical the president of MGM was at the time.
Not to mention the investment in the engineering.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, imagine a stage that gets perpendicular on you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, they invested $200 million in building this theater, which, as you describe it, is very unique in the world.
And how many years has it been on now?
It's been close to 10 years now.
10 years.
And I think it's there forever.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I always send my friends there because I said, listen, you can go see everything else, but you got to see that one first.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's very, very spectacular.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have built our brand in Las Vegas with the famous show O.
Yes.
And now we're adding other shows that are attracting a greater public. Ka is a good example of that. Michael Jackson show, the Beatles show.
I've seen them all. I've seen them all.
Thank you for that.
Can I tell you the only one I didn't like that much?
Which one?
Humanity.
Oh, yeah?
It was a different show for you.
It is. It is. Totally.
Everything else, I'm wowed.
Yeah, Humanity is more like an happening, you know, for a bunch of girls or a bunch of guys going out and having fun.
So alcohol's involved.
Right, totally.
What's in Mexico for you?
So Mexico is one of the most important market for us. There are a few things happening right now. First and foremost, we have a show called Hoya, which is a permanent show in Cancun. It's been there for 3 years, a big, big success. We are right now developing a theme park in Nuevo Vallarta. But more importantly, we have become, with Luzia, the ambassador of Mexico. There is this relationship between Cirque and Mexico that is very, very unique. So right now, Luzia, we've been traveling for 3 years in North America. Huge success. When you ask someone that I've seen Luzia after the show, you know, what do you think? They said unanimously, I feel like going to Mexico, which is great.
And that wasn't the design. It just happened.
Yeah, it happened. And because we are demonstrating this rich Mexican culture, people get it and they love it.
When did you get it?
You know, I've been involved with Mexico for many years now. There is something I have to say between French, Canadian, and Mexican. We're Latino.
I want to hear this.
Yeah, we're Latino. Latino. And that was easy for us to work with a Mexican team and a French Canadian team and develop this unique show that is very, very successful now.
I would think the more you develop and expand your performances and your number of venues, your biggest challenge is casting.
Totally. But the good news is we have in our data bank right now 75,000 artists. And we have scouts traveling around the world.
By the way, I will never be in that data bank.
No.
No, I can't do that. I mean, you know, I like to laugh that every year, every airline has to demonstrate they can safely evacuate a fully loaded plane with half the exits blocked in less than 90 seconds. And every airline passes the test. And my argument has always been the only way they do it is they've hired the cast from Cirque du Soleil. It's the only way they can do it.
Yeah, right? You're probably right.
Yeah.
You know, we have fantastic athletes. A lot of them are former Olympic athletes, amazing artists. We have 49 different nationalities represented within Cirque.
And then, of course, they have to be able to speak to each other.
Yeah, exactly. And you can imagine a lot of translator and all of that. I think we are, by definition, a good example of diversity because we can show that 49 different nationalities can live together and enjoy staying together.
Now, you know what my biggest challenge is when I go to one of your shows? To figure out who's the plant in the audience. And I feel like I like to hide out in the back because I don't want to get called on. But yeah. I know there's a plant in the audience every time.
Right, right. There are in some. Sometimes it's random.
But let's go back to Mexico for a second. What particularly are you focusing on about the Mexican culture in these shows?
It's the history of Mexico. It's the music. Music is a big, big part of the Mexican culture.
Well, you know, anybody who walks out of one of your shows buys the soundtrack. I mean, yeah. I love it because it's great. Same thing here?
Oh, yeah, even better. I think the music of Luzia is probably one of the best, and it's because it's inspired by the Mexican music. Also, the visual. When you see the visual of the show, you recognize Mexico. You know, it's so obvious that it's upbeat, like the Mexican people are upbeat.
Daniel Lamar, the president and CEO of Cirque du Soleil, is there a new show you're developing I need to know about?
We're developing a lot of new shows right now because, you know, we are in an expansion mode as
cruise
we speak.
Ships.
And we are on cruise ship.
Although some cruise ships have tried to copy you.
Yeah, I heard.
I know.
Yeah, it's flattered. When people start to copy you,
yes, but if you can do a Cirque du Soleil on a moving object on the water, you're in.
Yeah, but we did.
And
we have two ships right now, and we're going to build a show on a third one.
Daniel Lamar, President and CEO of Cirque du Soleil. That music means we're out of time for this hour. Stick around, everybody. We got a whole lot more coming from Mazatlan as Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns. And don't forget, Con Las Vegas, watch that stage. Back with more right after this.
This episode of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is brought to you by Gorillas Hotels Group, a chain of 4 hotels in Rwanda, the land of 1,000 hills.
And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. If you're just joining us on this last weekend in April, let me tell you where we're coming from. Get out your maps, boys and girls. 23 degrees, 14 minutes north. 106 degrees, 24 minutes west. We are in Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa in Mexico. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here in the air, and we will do that throughout the show. One item in the news I want to talk about because I get so many emails from people asking about this and phone calls as well. What happens if your plane gets delayed, canceled, they lose your baggage, something screws up, and in order to compensate you or to offer you a compensation, they offer you the dreaded voucher. No travel provider ever wants to part with cash, and yet if you're bold and persistent, they might actually write you a check. Let me give you an example of some stupidity here, okay? And this gets down to, and I'm not a lawyer, I don't play one on TV, but I could handle this case single-handedly. Let's take the case of the Norwegian Sun, a cruise ship going between Miami and Los Angeles. So it was a 15-day cruise going through the Panama Canal. And everybody gets on the ship, everybody's happy, they're on a cruise, everybody's, you know, delighted to be there. And there's a little note in their cabin from the captain saying, you know, welcome aboard the ship, and, you know, please don't mind it, but we're doing a little bit of refurbishing. A little bit of refurbishing? How about construction workers with hazmat suits, chemicals, gas masks, I mean, acetylene torches? They closed off parts of the ship. So by the time the ship leaves the harbor, people are going, I didn't pay for this. Not only that, they're walking around looking at guys with the hazmat suits on, going, what about us? If they're going to wear it, what about us? And a small revolt happened because there are parts of the ship that were closed off. Let's not talk about the noise factor, you know, pneumatic drills at sea, if you will. So here's what Norwegian offered them. And this is ridiculous. When are the cruise lines and the airlines and the hotels going to learn their lesson that this is not going to float? Get the pun? They offer them 25% off on their next cruise. What? No. Look, it's called failure to disclose. I didn't book a construction site. I booked a cruise. And if you're going to get screwed up to the point where obviously something wasn't scheduled properly and they had to do the work, then you let people know 24 hours, 48 hours, or 72 hours before they get to the ship and give them a choice. And in fact, what I'd say to them is, look, we're going to be doing some construction work on the ship. If you want 50% off, come with us. If not, we'll get you another cruise. At least they know what they're getting into. And that didn't happen. This also happens with airlines. You know, if they screw up, they want to give you a voucher, good for a discount on your next abusive flight. I mean, look, people paid a lot of money. They should get what they paid for. And if they don't, they should have the right to get a full refund in cash. You know, when airlines issue a weather waiver, and we've seen this a lot during this past winter, they're giving you an opportunity to rebook at no change fee. Well, that was pleasant. Okay. Or they're giving you the opportunity to get a full refund. That's what it should be, as opposed to a voucher. Now, if you fly a lot and a voucher means something to you, okay, but that should be your choice. It shouldn't be what the airline dictates to you. So here's the deal. It's like going to a bad auction. Don't raise your hand right away. Here's the deal. If you're in a situation where they're offering you some ridiculously, you know, 25% off on your next bad cruise, say no. Either this cruise is free or give me a full refund, and then we'll discuss it later. Because this is a clear-cut case of failure to disclose, and you're within your rights. This is not an act of God. This is not a tsunami. This is not a mechanical failure. This is an intentional act on the part of the cruise line to do maintenance work when they should have been delivering a cruise. You can't do both unless you fully disclose, and they didn't. All right, so that's my yelling and screaming for today. But I just had to mention that because you need to know that your rights are not the first offer they want to give you. It's the first offer you want to accept. And if more and more people say we're not accepting it, take a look at the Carnival Triumph. When that ship was adrift 90 miles off the coast of Mexico, and the first offer was 25% off on their next cruise, the passengers revolted and ended up getting a full refund and a free cruise. You know what? If the ship catches fire, I think you have something to talk about. Okay, moving right along. My next guests are U.S. expats, and they're from New Jersey. Am I right?
Jersey, yes.
Yeah.
But we don't say Jersey in Jersey.
Oh, really? Okay. Lloyd and Nancy Goldstein. And explain Mazatlan, My City.
Mazatlan, My City was a, or is a website that was started in March of 2012 by a gentleman called Simon Linz. We are the administrators / partners in all of this, and it's all about Mazatlan and what's going on. And
so basically,
the people.
You're doing a website full of information about what's going on here.
That's
absolutely
correct.
It's an online.
Okay, but now I got to ask the question.
Sure.
What brought you here? You've been here about 4 years.
That's correct.
From New Jersey.
From New Jersey. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I should. Wait, you're from New Jersey? I'll speak more slowly.
No.
Okay. Oh,
no.
Oh. Okay.
No, right. We're fast.
Okay, but what brought you here?
Well, what brought us here? Go ahead, Nancy.
Well, Lloyd's an avid bass fisherman, and he Googled one time the best bass lakes in the world. and Lake El Salto came up, which is about an hour and 15 minutes from here.
Now, you see, when I think about fishing in Mexico, yep. I'm thinking saltwater fishing and deep water.
Right? Most people do, yeah. but we're not into
it. And
that.
It's phenomenal, the right. saltwater fishing. But the Bass
Lake. You're a lake guy.
Yeah, the Bass Lake here in El Salto and Picachos, which is another one 45 minutes from here. First-class fishing for largemouth bass.
Okay, so now here's my stupid question, because I'm an East Coaster. I'm a New Yorker.
Yay!
Of course. And when I go fishing, if I'm going to work that hard for the fish, I'm eating the fish. Are you a catcher and release guy?
For bass, absolutely.
I'm not talking to you.
He takes a picture, gives it a kiss, and throws it back in the water.
And you say, what's for dinner?
Exactly. Not pasta.
So you came down for the fishing and stayed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What keeps you here?
The people,
for sure.
Okay, now I've got to ask you this as U.S. expats, mm-hmm. right? Before I came down here, mm-hmm. people say, where are you going? I go, Mazatlan. They go, oh, be careful. We'll be
yes,
safe.
Yes, I know.
Right?
It makes me crazy. It
happens to you too, right?
Well, yes. I still have two sisters that haven't come.
Because they're afraid.
It makes me so sad they're afraid.
And what's to be afraid about?
Nothing. There's absolutely nothing to be afraid about. I just wish they could come and see how beautiful, how safe, how kind and hardworking and gentle and welcoming the people of Mazatlan are.
You know, I talked about this earlier in the show, and that is, you know, the U.S. State Department advisories are, I'm sorry, misleading and misguiding.
Terrible.
To put Mazatlan and the state of Sinaloa in the same category as Syria is a little
that's
pathetic.
Crazy. Yeah, that's crazy.
But even, look, before I came down here today, oh, you're going down there? Oh, be careful.
It's so sad.
Are you kidding? Well, I'm more worried about New Jersey.
Yeah, you should be.
You bet.
There's more. I mean, I think there was at one point a wheel of crime, and gosh, I think New York and New Jersey were up there in like number 10 or 11, and Mexico, Mazatlan especially, was way down. Like
answer,
I don't know.
The answer really is, why would we live in a country that we would fear for our lives?
We're not dumb.
We're not stupid.
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah.
Hey, stick with me, and we'll be back with more.
You don't know it's long enough yet.
Give me time. Yeah. We'll be back with more Lloyd and Nancy Goldstein, and of course, Mazatlan, my city, as we return to Mazatlan right after this.
Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa in Mexico, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You can do it in your sleep. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And as I do every week at this time, I encourage you to go to our website with the most imaginative name possible, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work all around the world, opportunities for you to involve yourself in an up-close and personal way and give back every time you travel. And I guarantee you that what you get back from what you give back is exponential in return. And many of my listeners will call me and tell me just that. We always like to localize the volunteer vacation opportunities, and Mazatlan is certainly no exception. Here it comes. Mazatlan Animal Rescue was just formed 4 years ago in 2014 to unite several smaller animal rescue projects in the Mazatlan area. And they work with a close partnership with the Hope Animal Sanctuary. And the cool thing is they rescue, rehabilitate, and rehome. That's the key. Mazatlan Street Animals. We're talking about veterinary care, temporary housing, and a little bit of love, which you get to provide when you volunteer. And the cool thing is, whether you're just visiting or like Lloyd and Nancy want to do it full-time, they're open to it. I just have to give you one warning. If you do it, you're probably going to take one home, which is why they have to keep me away from there, because I will rescue as many as I can. It's like liberating, you know, a camp in the war. I mean, I just got to take them all. But my sister does this. She rescues animals every time she travels, and it's a great, great thing to do. And it's not just, you know, about doing it at home. When you travel, they need more help than anybody. So it's Mazatlan Animal Rescue. If you want to know more about it, it's very simple. MazatlanAnimalRescue.com/volunteer. Back with Lloyd and Nancy Goldstein and Mazatlan, my city. So since you've been here 4 years, mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're still fishing.
I am indeed.
All right. So you know where to take me fishing. That part I got.
Absolutely.
Although when you're not looking, I'm stealing the bass.
Taking it home to eat.
You.
Yeah, okay.
Can you or no? Come on.
You could.
You could.
I would much rather eat Dorado.
No, but if I wanted to have the bass,
yes,
I could.
You probably could. You probably
Would it be illegal to do that?
No.
No?
No.
So I can actually, wait a minute, I can actually go fishing with you, catch a fish like I would do in New York, mm-hmm. and eat that fish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I just want to make sure. I know, you're doing pasta, I know. But let's get away from the lake for a second, because Mazatlan is a lot more than that.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Let's talk about the city itself. What's the biggest surprise when your friends get bold enough to actually come down to see you that they're not expecting when they get here?
I think the beauty of the city. And again, it's got to be the people. They're just so welcoming and so very open to the American Canadian population.
And I think it's the culture. I think you have the Angelo Peralta Theater, and I think you have so many artists and so many
music
and art, and I think the culture.
Well, let's talk about the theater, because that's an amazing restoration.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I saw it the last time. It was amazing what they did, and it's
got
such great history.
Yep.
Yes. The theater went through many issues. The lady who it's named after never actually got to sing in the theater because she died before she actually sang in the theater, which is kind of strange. But
late at night when nobody's looking, she probably still singing.
Yeah.
But it's not just classical music, though. It's all types of music.
Ballet,
dance.
The culture is just
amazing here. I'll make a joke, which is not really funny, but someone ignorant asked me a long time ago when I was first going to come here, do they wear shoes? And I
said, would that be an American?
When I go, yes.
Do they wear shoes? American and ignorant sort of like go hand in hand.
Yeah,
do
sometimes.
Do they wear shoes? I said, when we go to the ballet, we wear shoes. Yes, we wear shoes. Oh, my gosh. No. Isn't that awful perception?
But you know what? Let's go back to perceptions for a second. Mm-hmm. Most of my friends, who I like to think are educated, mm-hmm. intelligent, mm-hmm. worldly, they still think of Mexico as a guy with a sombrero on a dusty street eating a tortilla.
It's killing me.
Period. Right?
The art here, they promote the arts, all the arts. Lloyd's an artist here. There's galleries. There's the art walk on Friday during the season, once a month on a Friday night from 4 to 8. There's 22 to 24 galleries to walk through, all kinds of art, photographs, paintings, jewelry, sculpture, just fabulous, fabulous.
And that's really exploded in the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
And the food scene.
The food scene is awesome. There, you have everything from street vendors to
high-end
restaurants that you'd find in New York City.
Absolutely.
And any major city in the United States.
Okay, so now I have to ask the obvious question, because you guys are the expats. Cost.
Cost
is
probably a third of what you would pay in the States for food.
So let me see if I get this straight. Mm-hmm. You came down here to bass fish. Mm-hmm. The next thing you know, you took one look at this place and said, okay, mm-hmm. we're leaving New Jersey. Mm-hmm. We're going to Mazatlan. Mm-hmm. Did you sell your house?
We literally sold our home, every single thing in it, which is a very heady move, but we did it.
Who was the hoarder?
We took the cat.
Who was the hoarder?
No, hoarding.
Me. Okay, you were. Okay, fine. Yeah.
Took the cat and the dog and 4 suitcases of clothes and shoes and moved to Mazatlan, Mexico, and never looked back without a minute of regret.
And all your friends think you're nuts.
Oh, well, they do. Absolutely. Yeah. They do. But we think it's their loss. You know, it's not.
I have buddies who I fished with, because we used to live on a lake in New Jersey. So I have buddies who still haven't come to, you know, experience. And I said, we have an extra bedroom. All you would need to do is get down here.
Yeah.
And,
I
don't get it.
But have any of your friends come down like you came down and go, oh, my God, I have been missing this? And have they made the decision to move here yet?
Not yet. We have a few new people that started at 2 months. Now they're up to 4 months. Next year they're doing 6 months.
And then pretty soon you can't get rid of them.
No, I just think that might happen, where they might make a permanent change.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest thing that surprised you about Mazatlan?
For me, it was how welcoming the people are. Again, this was our first foray into Mexico, so I'm going, well, are the people going to accept us?
Mazatlan was the first place you've ever gone in Mexico?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Just like that, you said we're staying.
But since we've been to other parts of Mexico, and we still feel we've traveled within the country, and we still feel this is the absolute best. We both love the water. We love the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And that matters a lot. And for me, it was mostly the people. But I have to say, the weather was a great surprise, because summer can be a little warm. Summer can be a little uncomfortably warm. But
you're here.
But we're here, and you use the air, and you get used to it. And while my sister was shoveling snow in New Jersey and cursing all winter, I'm like, well, I'm going to jump in the ocean now. She kind of told me to go jump in the lake. But, yeah.
Well, you could go jump in the lake, but you'd be eaten by a giant bass.
That's right.
But the point is, you're not having the weather extremes that you had back in New Jersey.
We'll never shovel snow again.
The only ice I ever want to see ever again is in my drink.
Okay, now, we'll get to that later. Do you have a car?
Yes, we do.
Okay, so that's but you got that here.
Well, we didn't have it for the first uh, the first 2 years that we went back and forth for 6 months, we didn't have one and we didn't miss it. The bus system here is incredible.
We shipped our car but from New Jersey
because he wouldn't drive
to Phoenix and then drove from Phoenix down to
when we made it permanent.
Right. Yep. And they let you in.
Yes.
And they let us in.
Mexican plates now?
Any day now. We just got our permanente.
What would you like to see changed here?
The perception. Again, it's the perception of the I want the people in the United States to understand how beautiful these people are and how beautiful the city is and how cultured. It's just a shame.
There are things here that are not perfect, but that is found anywhere you travel. So you put up with or you get used to the differences culturally, whatever, that you would find in the States, that you would find here. You just have to slow down because the people are not in a rush.
Yeah.
And just go with the flow.
And what's wrong with that?
I think the biggest example for me was I was an outside sales representative on the road all my life, and time was of the essence. If I was going to be 5 minutes late for a call, for an appointment, I would make sure I had to make a call. Here, because it doesn't matter, we're all retired, but here it's a much slower pace, and I was used to that New York fast, furious, and here it's just so relaxed and happy and calm.
We're talking with Lloyd and Nancy Goldstein of MazatlanMyCity.com. But I'm always arguing that people don't change their lifestyle when they change their location. You did.
Oh, yes.
Oh, gosh, yes.
It kind of forces you to because, again, the factor of being on that treadmill in New York and New Jersey versus here where there's none of that. So the stress level automatically decreases. And being retired, it's something where you now have time to pursue your other activities and enjoy your life.
And also, I was a 3 lymph nodes away from stage 4 colon cancer patient, and this place is healing. It's just remarkably healing. The ocean, the sun, the weather, the beautiful pace. Healing.
Lloyd and Nancy Goldstein, thanks for joining.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations on licking that cancer.
Thank you. Yep. 6 years clean. Thank you so much.
Congratulations. Back with more right from Mazatlan right after this.
Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you in Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa here in Mexico, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. We'll be doing that throughout the show. My next guest, I always like to talk to the locals, especially if they're expats, because they know everything. And not only that, they're living here for a reason. My next guest is the owner and publisher of Mazatlan Life. Her name is Sheila Madsen. How are you, Sheila?
I'm very well. How are you?
Now, you're not a U.S. girl. You're a Canadian girl.
Yeah, I'm Canadian.
So say the word about.
We don't really say that.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, about.
There it is.
Yes.
Okay.
There you go.
How long have you been in Mazatlan?
9 years.
And what brought you down here?
Climate, culture, change. Toronto is a very, very cold city.
And so you were a snowbird?
Yeah. No.
No?
No. Came here full on. Moved here.
But you first came down in the winter?
Yeah.
Well, then you were a snowbird when you came down.
Well, I was already retired. Sorry.
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
How has it changed?
It's way better. I mean, we came at... How was Mazatlan changed?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, we came in 08, and that was not a good time.
That was not a good time worldwide.
No, and the SARS flu, and it's really, really improved. The restaurants are better. Everybody's feeling really positive.
I mean, I first came to Mazatlan, I shouldn't date myself, but I will, 1973. I drove the first Baja Highway from California, get down to La Paz, and then took the overnight ferry.
Wow.
And came across. It was wild.
So it's changed since 1973.
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, when I drove down the highway, I mean, you didn't drive at night, ever, because people were drunk. They hadn't experienced that highway before.
Uh-huh.
It was brand new. And there was no infrastructure. The resorts hadn't really been built. I mean, there were a couple of small little hotels.
Playa Mazatlan was probably around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you had the bullfighting ring. You still had that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the cool thing about that was they weren't killing the bull. We loved that. But the overnight ferry was the most incredible thing because people would be up on the deck playing their guitars and singing. And I mean, it was just a very local experience, which I loved.
Yeah.
And it still is.
It is, but it's a brand new ferry, I understand.
Listen, yes. I saw it the other day. Yeah, it is brand new.
Yeah.
They needed it.
I guess.
Yeah. So what keeps you down here?
Well, this really is our home. I mean, it's a combination of the climate, the people. They're so friendly. And probably the big surprise coming from a Canadian is a superb health care. I mean, we have access to some of the best doctors and dentists. And
yet the argument would be that Canada's got great health care.
That's not true.
You're doing better here.
Oh, way better. Yeah, you do pay for it. But in Canada, you pay for your taxes as well.
Well, listen, there's a small community on the other side of the border of Yuma, Arizona, called Los Algodones. And every year from, let's say, November to March, 15,000 Americans drive their car to the border and walk across a bridge into Los Algodones because it's called the town of dentists. And these are Americans who are either underinsured or uninsured. And they get great dental care. And it's done in one day. You don't have to wait for the lab to get back to you 3 weeks later. It's all there.
Well, here you own your medical history. You're not dependent on your doctor. I mean, you can go and get your own blood tests. You can get anything done. And you can see a specialist within 2 or 3 days.
That's not bad.
Are you kidding? In Canada, sometimes it's 6 months.
Still.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, it's better here.
Now, let's talk about, your publication.
Yeah.
Because you're not supported by tourism.
No.
You take no advertising.
No.
It's supported by you.
Yes.
How do you do it?
I invest a little money and time and love and passion. And we were pretty young to retire. And it was really, really needed here. There was nothing online. There was no calendar. There's so much art and live music, as you probably know. You've experienced it. You've probably been to the theater.
All that. Well, the Restored Theater is amazing.
Yeah. In El Peralta. So I sort of wrapped my arms around it all and really consolidated so people can see what's going on until June, July, August, until next Carnival.
I know. And the thing is, there's so much happening here that never was happening before.
And it happens sometimes 3 days before. I mean, that's the thing. It's a very spontaneous culture, as you know. It's last minute. And we've got a lot of stars here, opera singers that come home, and then suddenly there's a concert. So on it goes on Mazatlan life.
And that's one of the reasons why you stay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's just all year.
I mean, it's not just seasonal anymore.
The summer's pretty low, but there's stuff going on. That's true. That's true. In the theater.
Right. But the theaters, when I was down here, the theater was closed, but it was just closed for a day or two. Then it comes back open again. And that theater is a great restoration story.
Beautiful.
I mean, when you walk inside, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. It's just one of the best acoustically. Too.
And naturally acoustic.
Yes.
I know.
Yes, it's great.
And they fixed up the Malecón.
Well, you know why that is.
No, tell me why.
It's because of the big Tiangas. Are you going to be part of the Tiangas?
Oh, you're talking about the big tourism convention.
Yeah, the big tourism.
Yes, but they needed an excuse to do it, but the good news is they did it.
Yeah, and everybody got together. Federal, state, city, it's really, really beautiful.
Yeah, I rode my bike down there. It was great.
Yeah.
And even when before they finished all the putting in all the cobblestones and stuff, I got through.
Yeah.
And yet you have great cobblestone streets, too, I mean, on the side streets.
Yes, those are all new. Everything was done last summer.
Amazing.
Yeah.
When we come back, I want to talk to you about your choices for, now that we're here, where to go, what to do, the food choices here, which are amazing now. It's not just a bad enchilada, right?
No.
I know. We're talking to Sheila Madsen, the owner of Mazatlan Life. And when we come back, we will get back in touch about all those choices that she can make because she's not just, just some Canadian now. You're basically Mexican now, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes. Back right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you in Mazatlan. We've been talking to Sheila Madsen, the owner of Mazatlan Life. So now that I can call you a local, I can after 9 years.
Yeah, the reason I hesitated is I'm not fluent yet in Spanish.
Well, you don't have to be fluent in Spanish in Mazatlan. People do speak English here.
Oh, they do, but I'm a little embarrassed that I'm not fluent yet.
Okay, follow me. Ready? ¿Dónde está el baño? You got that one, right?
Yeah.
Good. Just double check. But now that you've been here 9 years, right, you're coming up on your 10th, mm-hmm. The restaurant scene has changed dramatically. I mean, we're talking world-class gastronomic experience.
That's been one of the biggest changes.
Okay. I'm going to ask you basically, where are you going to go for breakfast? Where are you taking me for breakfast?
Oh, your team asked me this. You know, I live in Central. You know the know the different areas.
I do.
And within 20 minutes, I call it the Central Food Loop. There are 50 restaurants within 20 minutes in Central alone. So I would have to ask. By asking you, what do you feel like for breakfast? What kind of atmosphere? Do you want to be on the beach? Do you want to be in a courtyard? Do you want to be in the hustle and bustle? I mean, where would you like to be?
Ah, but I have to ask you a question in return. Where do you want to go, Sheila?
I go where they have the best cappuccino.
Now we're talking. Okay, where do they have the best cappuccino?
I would have to say Hector's Bistro has one.
I know Hector.
Yeah.
And we actually did a show with Hector.
Yeah, he's great. We've done cooking shows with him. He's on the site. Yeah.
And the nice thing about Hector, he's actually there.
Yes, he
is. I mean, you know, it's not one of those star chefs who, like, shows up once a year for a publicity photo. He's in the kitchen.
No, he's there. They've got the best coffee.
Okay, so they got the best coffee.
Yeah, okay, so I'd go there for coffee.
Okay. And what would you order for breakfast?
I love the way he does eggs. I think he uses a pound of butter for eggs.
So you need a large spatula to leave the restaurant.
And, you know, it's a bakery, so...
Oh, I know.
Yeah, so there's lots of choices there.
So basically, you're hanging there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, for lunch?
For lunch, I would go... to the square, to the Plazuela Machado.
Now, there are lots of places on the square.
I know. That's the thing. I'm having trouble. One of my favorites is Gaia. Do you, Gaia Bistro?
Because?
Because it's international. It's open every day, and the chef there is amazing. And so, he's there. He's there all the time.
And what are we ordering for lunch?
You want risotto? Do you want shrimp? Do you want fish? Steak? It's all salads.
It's all international.
It's all international. Yeah.
Now, dinner's the tough one because there's atmosphere and then there's food. Give me both. Where are we going?
Oh.
Sheila, work with me. Come on.
I know. I can't. That should take you to the beach, but I can't. We should go to the Holiday Inn, the 15th floor, for a drink.
The Holiday Inn.
Yeah. Have you been there yet?
Come on. Tell me more.
No. Have you been?
I have not been to the Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
Not here.
Yeah. No, but the Holiday Inn has got a new 15th floor bar. Gorgeous.
So, okay, we start there.
We start there. We watch the sunset.
Okay, then?
Then I may take you. Well, you're paying, right?
It's on me.
Oh, it's all great. That's okay, great. Then the sky's the limit. Then we go to Agatha's.
Because?
Because, again, it's international food. It's owned by, they also own the restaurant beside it, Vittorio. It's Italian, but Agatha's is international. Different food, great chef, Miguel. And then I bring you back to Central. Maybe to Life in Espanol. Have you been to Life in Espanol in the Golden Zone?
I have not.
It's real. They've got a smaller one in Central.
Yep.
And then I take you back to the square for another drink.
So basically we're drinking.
We're drinking a lot, yes.
Oh, these Canadians. I don't know.
No, wine. Just a little wine.
Of course.
Yes.
But the thing about Mazatlan, which you haven't mentioned yet, is seafood.
You know, it's a given. I eat shrimp. I eat shrimp all the time. And fish.
Now, you know what I love? You're going to laugh. But I discovered it actually in Mexico City. Almejas chocolatas, the chocolate clams. Do you know about that?
No idea.
There's something I just told you about. Okay, Miss International.
Oh, no. But you probably know way, you travel way more than I do, and you probably know lots more about food than I do.
No, I don't. Yeah. No, I just like it.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, they're not chocolate clams. They're just chocolate-colored clams. They're brown clams that they do with garlic and oh, my God, just a little spicy, and it's great.
So are you into eating ants and stuff like that when you go to Mexico City?
No, I'm not.
No?
Are you?
I took one for the team. I think you interviewed Diego from Casa Garcia.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, he gave me some ants. I took one for the team. I won't be doing that again.
No. Now, had you not known it was an ant?
No, you'd know it's an ant.
You know it's an ant.
Yeah,
how do you know? Come on, tell me.
Because I got little things all over the place.
All right, so we're not going to eat the ants.
No.
No, okay.
No.
But the cool thing is, anywhere you go, it's Marisco City here, right? It's seafood.
Yeah.
And it's all day boat stuff.
Yeah, it's all fresh, it's all fish, it's lovely.
And the cool thing is, for somebody who drinks and eats, I can tell everybody in my radio audience, you do not weigh 500 pounds.
No, I don't. It's because I exercise every day. I exercise just so I can have a glass of wine.
Or two.
Yeah.
See, you're busted.
Yeah.
Sheila Mattson, the owner of Mazatlan Life. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. Back with more from Mazatlan, if Sheila doesn't slip me a bad aunt. Back right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you in Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa in Mexico, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-887-3837. 888-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. We'll be doing that throughout the show. You know, every time I go somewhere, I make it a point of only going to one museum. Because if I go to more than one museum, I get completely, my eyes glaze over. I can't handle it. I can't really absorb and immerse. And there's a museum here which is really interesting. It's the Mazatlan Art Museum. And joining me now is the director, Cecilia Sanchez.
Yes, nice to meet you. And
nice
thank you for the invitation.
Yeah. Yes. And you've been doing this museum for about 7 years.
And no, I've been only for 1 year and 2 months.
Oh, but you were doing something in the theater before that.
Yes, I used to work in Instituto de Cultura, and I have been promoting art ever since I've been an artist.
Now, when I first came down to Mazatlan back in 1973, there wasn't much of an art scene that I saw. It has exploded down here.
Yes.
And yet, it's not just the current artists. What you're doing at that museum is also celebrating the history.
Yes, and ecological culture and the south of the towns of Sinaloa culture and many other things. It's not only about art, but culture, and we do all culture.
And you've had about 300 different shows.
Yes, we've been working a lot. And also, I agree completely, you go to a city, you go to a cathedral, you go to the market, and you go to the museum. So we work every
day. But only
day.
One cathedral, only one market, and only one museum.
And we do have one museum here. So what we do is that inclusiveness, that's what I wanted to mean a few seconds ago, because we have so much richness here that, you know, we have art, we have crafts, we have many things going on. So that's why it's so rich.
And not just Mexican artists.
No, that's one thing that is very valuable. Right now we have 2 Canadian artists.
How did they sneak in?
Well, one was a friend of mine 7 years ago because I've been promoting art, you know, several time. And the other one approached the museo, as you said. She knew about the museo. She approached to us. She submitted. And she said, I want to exhibit. And I said, yes, good. But also, you have to share with the locals. And so what about a workshop? So we do the frottage art workshop.
So it's interactive.
Yes. So we went to the street, to the walls of Centro Histórico, and we worked with Manon Coté from Montreal, Canada. It's a success. Her exhibit is still on.
You know, one of the trademarks of the museum is not an exhibit. It's a tree.
Yes. The name is Macapule. It's the personaje. I don't know how to, the character. I don't know. Because it represents life, and in our pre-Hispanic values, we always had the tree as the two worlds, the world you can see and the world that you cannot see. But it's parallel because the roots are very similar to the branches.
But you also do things around the tree.
Of course, we do air dance, and also
What do you do?
Air dance.
What is
we
air
have
dance?
A workshop, danza aerea.
I do
aerial
that,
dance.
I do air dance in the shower. That's a different deal.
No, that's different. So they hang from the branches of the tree with fabrics, color fabrics. It looks beautiful. And also, it's like a magnet because people are walking, and then they turn and they look all these wonderful dancers, adults and kids with these colorful fabrics doing dance.
One of the things that surprised me in doing my research about your museum is that you don't really have permanent exhibits because of the humidity.
That's right. We have to adapt to where we live. And we here in Mazatlan, we have 60%, 80% humidity, and that can kill a piece of art. So we cannot exhibit longer than 3 months.
Wow. So basically, every time you come back, whether you like it or not, there's a new exhibit.
Yes. We have them moving every 2-3 months. We have galleries. We have 2 galleries that one is monthly and the other one is open for artists who come because we are in a port and many international or that come from Mexico City or Guadalajara, they have a conference, they can bring art. So we have a moving gallery that we can put art on it 1 week or 1 day.
Of all the exhibitions that you've had, what was the one that surprised you the most that you weren't expecting?
Well, I can say that it's Joyce Mahisky, one of the Canadian artists who's a friend of mine, because we were working long distance, and she's using nets, fishing nets. And I already had seen...
Using fishing nets as what?
As an installation. So the exhibit is called Catch of the Day, meaning that we are eating plastic because fish are eating plastic. So she made like a corridor. That was a surprise. She told me the story. We got the nets for her, but I didn't know how she was going to solve it to give the sensation that you are like drowning. among all the plastic, being a fish or being a human in the ocean.
And let's face it, we talk about the sea of plastic.
Yes.
Which is out there.
Yes, it is.
By the way, the sea of plastic, this is not an exaggeration, is the size of Texas.
I know, and we are doing lots of work. Last night's exhibit is about guarding the cuencas, the basins, our fountains of water. So it's a survival, and art is a wonderful and powerful tool because you don't have to explain a lot. Visual and images do it.
Well, if you're a good storyteller.
Well, as Joyce Maschiske is, and the artists that are displaying
and
the
it's
museum.
And it's making that statement.
Yes, it is, and people are very surprised, as I was, and we also have the music of whales because they're singing, right? So you get into the ambience. It's a all around the same concept.
Cecilia Sanchez, the director of the Mazatlan Art Museum, thank you so much. That music you hear means we're out of time for this hour. Stick around, everybody. We've got a whole lot more coming from Mazatlan in Sinaloa, in Mexico, as Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns right after this.
This episode of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is brought to you by Gorillas Hotels Group, a chain of 4 hotels in Rwanda, the land of 1,000 hills.
And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. If you're just joining us on this last weekend in April, let me tell you where we are. Get out those maps, boys and girls. 23 degrees, 14 minutes north. 106 degrees, 24 minutes west. We are coming to you from the state of Sinaloa in Mexico, and in particular, right here on the water in Mazatlan, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. We'll be doing that throughout this segment as well. You can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Peter S. Greenberg, or Facebook, which is facebook.com/Peter Greenberg. I've been coming to Mazatlan, I've said this earlier on the show, since 1973, and I've seen so many of the changes. I loved it then. I love it now. I don't feel any safety issues every time I come, although so many of my friends are always telling me, oh, be careful. Really? And what the State Department has done in terms of their designations and their State Department advisories have really painted this place in the worst possible light with the broadest possible brush, putting Mazatlan in the same category of do not travel as you would put Yemen, Syria, and parts of Saudi Arabia is just ridiculous. And now, speaking of me coming since 1973, my next guest is a UK expat who's been living here for, 13 years now, Simon Lins, who... You were in the media business in the UK, and then you decided to come here and start something like that. But what really attracted me to talk to you today is because you're living my dream life, because you went out and got yourself a baseball team.
I'm working with a baseball team, absolutely.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, yeah. this is it. This is Bull Durham south of the border.
Well, I have to say, I've been a sports person all my life, played soccer. And have been an active member of, in terms of sport. And when I got the chance to work with a baseball team, even though...
What did you know about baseball?
Not much. Not really much. I know a little bit about softball, but not too much about baseball.
Well,
I'm still
softball
learning.
Rules are about the same as baseball rules, more or less.
Well, are they a little bit more technical, though? Aren't they a bit more complicated?
Well, it's the same principle,
Same principle, hit a bat. I used to play a little bit of softball when I was in England. We played in Regent's Park, so I did a bit of that. But yes, to be honest with you, I'm no expert, but
does the team have a name?
It's called the Venados. They're V-E-N-A-D-O-S, and they've been around since the 40s, and they moved into their stadium in 1962 in Mazatlan, and then they are right in the process now of remodeling that stadium to make it a state-of-the-art, 21st century facilities, and that's going to be ready for the inaugural game on 11th of October.
So they start their season when we're finishing ours.
That's exactly right. And of course, you have some of the players that come from the States to play here, professional players from...
So they stay active until the regular season starts
exactly,
back in the
States? Right, exactly, yeah. So they extend their season, yeah.
Now, do you now understand baseball?
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I'm in love with the Venados. The Venados are kind of really much a part of the DNA of
do they have a cheer? Is there a special cheer for them?
Well, there's different kinds of cheers, actually. They're different kind of rally cries, and I
But they're a professional team.
They're a professional team, absolutely. They play in the Mexican League.
The season starts October 11th and goes till?
End of December.
That's a short season.
And then it's playoffs. So what they do is they all compete to get into the Latin American equivalent of the World Series called the Caribe. And that's the most prestigious tournament. And if you win that, then you're effectively the champions of Latin America.
So in a given season, not counting playoffs or the World Series, how many games are we talking about?
34. 34 home games. So that would be 68.
So that's basically one third of the games that a major league team plays in the States.
There you go. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you have a star?
I think there's quite a few stars. And this new season, although I'm not in a real position to talk about it quite yet, but this season they're signing up some new players, so pretty confident we're going to do well.
But their payroll is nowhere near.
No, absolutely not.
Right. Now, are these games televised?
Yes. Yeah, they are televised, yeah.
So Mazatlan is a baseball capital.
Yes, exactly. And, and as I said, it's this new stadium is being increased from, it's the remodeled stadium will go from 9,000 approximately to 15,000 capacity. And so it's going to be really exciting.
I got to ask a stupid question. How's the stadium food?
It's kind of like you would get in the States, but much, much cheaper.
Anything cheaper than stadium food in the States.
And the beer. I would argue it's better, actually, because it's more varied. But food's good. And as I say, in the new stadium, there's going to be, there's going to be a restaurant. There's actually going to, and lots of food concessions. So pretty cool stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
So if you don't understand the game, at least you'll eat well.
And have a few beers.
Probably some Pacificos.
Pacifico, Corona, that kind of stuff, yeah. And it's an amazing atmosphere, actually. It's a real family-driven party atmosphere. So
the kids are drinking beer, too?
No, okay, not quite. Okay, no, that's not what I meant. But okay. It's very much, it's very much driven by families going and enjoying it. And it's kind of going back to your safety, when you introduce the show. These guys all go in an amazing environment, a family environment, just enjoy the game. And whether or not the team wins, it's still huge, hugely fun. It's just wonderful.
And it's a nine-inning game.
So it occasionally goes to 1:30 in the morning because sometimes they don't actually start the games till 8 o'clock at night.
And they just keep going.
And the Mexicans love it.
Well, speaking of loving Mexico, what brought you here?
Originally, I worked in media. Actually, we had our offices in London and New York. And I needed a holiday. And a friend of mine, a then friend of mine, said to me, you should try Mazatlan. It's a wonderful,
Did you even know
place.
Where it was?
I had no idea. Didn't even, not a clue. I mean, I had to be educated in the fact that it was in Mexico to begin with. So, no, not a clue.
You're starting to talk like an American.
Yes. Well, there we are then. But I've been, I've traveled across most of the United States, all of Europe. And so I was tempted by this new experience. And so I came to Mazatlan. It was a relatively easy journey from London. And I was just, I just fell in love with it. And it was the people, actually, that I fell in love with. I just think they're so warm and generous and friendly and, and their humour, their sense of humour is very much like the English. It's quite dark.
All right, so I got to go back to the baseball team for one more question.
Go on, then.
We know that the stadium food is less expensive than stadiums in the U.S.
Right.
How much is the ticket to the game?
Let me put it this way. You can buy a full season ticket, which obviously is about half the games, right now they're offering it a 30% discount. So you can get for about 4,000 pesos, just under 3,990 pesos, you can get a full season ticket. So you'll get 34 games.
For dollars, what's that feel like?
What that be about? $220 bucks, something
for
like
a season that. Ticket?
For a season ticket, yeah.
Right behind home plate?
And right behind home. Actually, that's true.
Simon Linz, I'm coming out to see the Venados when they're playing in October.
Great, I hope you do. I'll invite you to the inaugural game.
I'll be there. I'll bring my pesos.
I'd love that. That'd be
back
great.
With more from Mazatlan when we return right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. And as I do every week at this time, I encourage you to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for our comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard work all around the world, and opportunities for you to literally immerse yourself and give back every time you travel. We always like to localize the volunteer vacation opportunities, and Mazatlan is certainly no exception. Check out Mazatlan Animal Rescue. These guys have been only open since 2014, but they do great work in working with all the different other sanctuaries to provide rescue, rehabilitation, and rehoming the animals, right? The street animals of Mazatlan, which, of course, if you go to do that, you know what's going to happen. You're going to end up taking one home, and why not? You get to volunteer morning, afternoon, even a weekend, doesn't matter. They need your help, and you know what? You got to do it. You want more information? Go to MazatlanAnimalRescue.com/volunteer. You heard me in the opening of the show talk about my issue with the United States State Department issuing their State Department advisories and the new system that goes into four levels for every country in the world, all 196 of them, and done under four tiers, right? Tier one, travel with normal caution. I have no idea what that means. Travel level number two, travel with increased caution. I still don't know what that means. Level three is reconsider travel. And then level four, which is the most scary, because most people think it's a rule or a law or a regulation, is do not travel. And there are a number of states in Mexico that are still listed under that Category 4 by the Department of State under this new system of State Department advisories. And Sinaloa is one of those states. What's crazy about it is we're painting with such a broad brush, it's like putting Mazatlan in the same category as Syria. It makes no sense. We're coming to you today from Mazatlan. It's my third visit in less than a year. I don't feel unsafe. I don't feel threatened. I don't feel in any danger. And joining me now to talk about this is His Excellency the Governor of Sinaloa, Cornelio Adaz Capul. Governor, welcome to the show. And, of course, my good friend Jerry Tanaka is going to do some translation. So, Jerry, I'm going to ask the governor, you know, the worst four-letter word that starts with F is fear. What I'm trying to say is, when you're based on fear, when your decisions are based on fear, you don't go anywhere.
Cuando las decisiones están basadas en el miedo, uno no puede llegar a ningún lugar.
And so many of the people that I know in America, my fellow Americans, are saying to me when I tell them I'm coming to Mazatlan, oh, be careful, be safe, why are you going?
Y sus amigos cuando le preguntan, cuando él les comenta que va a ir a Mazatlán, sus amigos le preguntan, ¿por qué vas? ¿Por qué vas a Mazatlán?
And I think they're crazy because I don't have a problem here. I've been coming since 1973. Every city has some form of street crime. I live in a city that has a lot of street crime. It's called New York. It doesn't stop me from going to New York. And I don't look at Mazatlán as having a lot of street crime. I don't understand what the problem is other than the United States painting all of Mexico, in many cases, with a very broad brush.
Y él no entiende cuando sus amigos tienen miedo de que él venga a Mazatlán, porque le dicen que puede ser peligroso. Sin embargo, no lo entiende porque él vive en una ciudad como Nueva York que tiene mucho crimen en las calles, y esto no está en Mazatlán. Esto, él no ve nada de crimen en Mazatlán en las calles.
So, Governor, you were born here. You're from Mazatlán.
Yes.
Yes. So, what changes have you seen? And what message do you want to give my audience about Mazatlán?
¿Qué cambios ha visto en Mazatlán? ¿Y qué mensajes quisiera darle a la audiencia acerca de Mazatlán?
Que Mazatlán está precioso. Mazatlán is beautiful. Mazatlán es un lugar pacífico. Mazatlán se vive extraordinariamente bien. La vida es tranquila. La gente de aquí puede andar de un lado para otro. Pasea con sus hijos, pasea con familias. Puede disfrutar una buena pesca, puede disfrutar ir a jugar golf, puede disfrutar ir a ver el béisbol. Realmente es un privilegio vivir en Mazatlán.
Mazatlán is a beautiful city. It's tranquil, relaxing, and families can go together and just walk downtown in Mazatlán or go fishing or play golf. And it's a beautiful place to be.
And yet, so many people, and I remember a situation where we had some cruise ships come in, and a woman had her purse snatched. And the next thing you know, the cruise ship said they weren't coming back.
Que lo que no entiendo fue una situación cuando un crucero vino y a una mujer, solo a una mujer, le quitaron su bolsa por las calles. Y entonces el crucero dejó de venir.
Bueno, es un absurdo.
That's absurd.
Es un absurdo. Realmente hay mucha seguridad para la gente que viene en los cruceros. Y además hemos reforzado todo eso, pero prueba de que Mazatlán ha generado y despertado mucha confianza es que el año que entra ya nos confirmaron 121 arribos de cruceros.
So, yeah, that's absurd, because actually there is a lot of security for tourists and for all the people, and also the people arriving to in ships and cruises. And actually, proof of that is that next year, Mazatlán just confirmed 121 arrivals of cruises for next year.
What have you had to do to convince the cruise ships to come back?
¿Qué tuvo que hacer para convencer a los cruceros de que vinieran?
Ellos se dieron cuenta que el problema de la seguridad ya no existía, no era un problema. Que lo que Mazatlán necesitaba era una profunda transformación, renovación para del destino, del producto, para hacerlo más atractivo. Y eso es lo que hemos hecho. Cambiar totalmente el centro histórico, remodelar la Avenida del Mar, el Malecón, crear áreas, espacios públicos como el Parque Ciudades Hermanas, Playa Norte, para darle más que hacer a la gente, no solo el sol y playa.
Well, the people in the cruises realized that insecurity wasn't a problem anymore. And they realized that the issue was to renew Mazatlán, and that is what they have done with downtown, with all the infrastructure in downtown and different parks, the other parks, and also the renewal of the Malecón to make it beautiful.
I shall tell the governor that I was here not too long ago and got a bicycle and ran all the way up and down the Malecón. Had a great time.
Bicycle and walking.
Yeah.
Priority is the people.
Bicycle during the day,
yes.
Walking en la noche.
Yes, walking in the noche.
Yeah.
The downtown in the night is beautiful.
It comes alive.
Yes.
It is.
The light, cada vez, every time is more restaurants and more commerce and more business.
Si puede beber y si puede bailar.
Si puede bailar y además... Es una maravilla cómo se come en Sinaloa.
I'm going to translate myself. I said, if you can drink, you can dance. Yes.
And also, it's amazing, like the food in Sinaloa.
Yes, the food is quite amazing. And that's the other stereotype that I think so many of my fellow Americans don't understand. They think of Mexico as a tortilla or an enchilada. And it's so much more than that.
Y realmente lo que no entienden es cuando sus amigos piensan que en México lo que se come solo es tortilla o solo enchiladas, y realmente la comida de México es mucho más que eso.
Pues están equivocados, porque realmente lo que les falta es venir más a México y que platiquen con la gente que viene a México, que regresa realmente muy contenta.
And exactly as you said, they are wrong, because what they need is to come to Mazatlán and come to Mexico and try the food and return.
Okay, so here's my question for the governor. How do you get them to come if the state of Sinaloa is categorized as a level 4?
¿Cómo los haría venir? ¿Qué les diría para que vengan cuando el estado está categorizado como un 4 en el Travel Advisory?
Que realmente hay una exageración, hay una percepción errónea, equivocada. Porque una cosa es, nos ha hecho daño el estigma de el nombre de los cárteles, pero esos cárteles están en otras partes, ¿no?
First is the perception, the wrong perception that they have. Something important is like people hear about the cartels, but those cartels are not here. Those are in another place, but not here in Sinaloa and not here in Mazatlán.
We're talking to the governor of the state of Sinaloa, Karina Ordaz-Coppel. Governor, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And I'll be back on my bicycle tomorrow on the Malecón.
Yes.
Muchas gracias por venir. Muchas gracias por acompañarnos. Y mañana va a tomar una bicicleta, va a andar en bicicleta por el Malecón.
Lo que más nos puede ayudar es gentes como Peter, que hablen bien de Mazatlán.
The best thing to have is people like you that talks good about Mazatlán and the truth.
Thank you, Governor.
Platica tus experiencias y tus emociones.
Please tell to the people your experiences and your emotions.
I will. And I'm also going to take a quick break. Back with more from Mazatlán right after this. Thank you very much, Governor.
Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here with you in Mazatlan, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know exactly what to do. You email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, and your problem. We're going to solve it right here on the air. You know, I always like to talk to the locals. My next guest is totally local, born and raised here from Mazatlan. But even better, he's the director of the Cultural Center of Mazatlan. His name, and I'm going to pronounce it just the way he gave it to me, Raul Rico.
That's it.
Did I do okay?
Perfect.
I'm going to do that all night. Raul Rico.
Okay.
For the man who knows who I am. No, I'm not. But for people who need to immerse themselves, and that means anybody who's an intelligent traveler, in the place that they're visiting, your place is not a bad place to start.
No, it is not.
Tell me about the culture of Mazatlan.
Culture of Mazatlan? Yeah. Well, Mazatlan has had a vocation for art and culture since the foundation of the city. In the 19th century, the city was founded mainly by American, British, Spanish people, German, a lot of Germans here.
Because of the port.
Because of the port and the mining activity.
Yeah.
And since then, Mexico started, Mazatlan started to have a lot of fine arts and arts activities. We had a symphony orchestra, theater, ballet.
Well, I know about
I'm
the
talking
theater.
About the 1900s, the early 1900s.
Is there still a symphony orchestra?
Yes, and a chamber orchestra. And we have a ballet company and a contemporary dance and singers, extraordinary singers. Even we have alumni from our school that are singing in Philadelphia, in L.A., in New York, in Zurich, and in all around the world.
Homegrown.
Homegrown.
You know, you mentioned ballet. I grew up watching Ballet Folklorio, right?
Oh, you're right.
Of course.
Of course.
But your ballet is called what?
It's Ballet Mazatlan. And it's a company composed by Mexican dancers and many Cuban dancers, gold medalists in Europe and extraordinary performers.
So Mazatlan, when you think about it, is not places where people come on the road. You're an incubator. It's actually starting here.
Yes, I think this is an incubator, and that's why we have so much activity. You would not understand the growth of the historic district without the cultural activity, with the school, the dancers, musicians, singers that perform there. And well, we have the house packed mostly by visitors, even local, but around 50% of the audience are American or Canadians or Europeans.
So they've discovered it.
They discover it, and they have made a group that is supporting the arts, and that's extraordinary for us.
Well, I'll tell you what was extraordinary for me, and it was a surprise for me, quite frankly, is to see Mazatlan as a city that's actually in love with the arts.
Yes, it is. And I think it's a factor that differentiates us from other beach resorts.
Yeah, because you don't equate a beach resort with an art district.
Yes.
Not necessarily.
But not anywhere in Mexico. Most have a beautiful beach, sunsets, and very nice hotels. But we have the local life. It's a society that has lived here for a long time, and performers that act for our visitors.
Is it safe to say that Mazatlan is an art-driven community?
Yes, absolutely.
And yet when I first came here, 1973, I didn't see any of that.
No, the early years. We started with that war since 1975.
Story of my life. I missed it by 2 years.
Since the 1990s,
It's exploded.
It's exploded.
And the gallery scene here, I mean, not just the cultural center, but the gallery scene here, mm-hmm. You can walk the streets and see the galleries, and if you're like me, you end up buying something.
We have a group of galleries that are supported by the American and Canadians, too. So you can, the first Friday of every month, you can move around and visit all the galleries. And, well, it's like a social encounter, too.
Alcohol is involved.
Is it? Well,
yeah. Well, come on.
Well, not exactly, but if some galleries serve alcohol, that's fine.
I'm kidding you.
It's the spirit.
What's the biggest surprise when people come to the center, for example? Because uh-huh. You have a theater there, you have exhibits, you have lots of things going on. Mm-hmm. But what's the biggest surprise to them that they're not expecting to see?
Well, I think if you go to downtown, to the historic district, you will find a beautiful place that was not there, well, so clean, so beautiful, 2 years ago. It was completely remodeled.
And the colors.
The colors are beautiful. All the facades are beautiful. There is a lot of there is a planning about the vegetation in the area, and the streets are cobble streets, beautiful.
And there's always something going on at your center.
Of course.
Opera,
and
opera.
At the restaurants too, because we have a very good gastronomy too. So you can go to attend the theater and then go to a good restaurant in the Plazuela Machado or the streets nearby.
So what you're telling me is it's one-stop shopping.
It's a one-stop shop.
I love it. Raul Rico, the director of the Cultural Center right here in Mazatlan, a must-stop when you're here because, in my experience, you never know what you're going to see until you get there because it's always changing.
Yes, we have like 500 events a year.
Amazing.
Besides Raul, carnival and festivals.
Raul, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Back right after this from Mazatlan.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Mazatlan in the state of Sinaloa in Mexico, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. So much to talk about, and let's get right to some of your emails. Here's one from Charlotte Wilkins in Bethlehem, PA. My husband, 14-year-old son, and I are going to Spain, and we've never been. We are staying in Marbella. And I'm getting so overwhelmed trying to plan an itinerary. I was wondering if you had any recommendations for to do as a family. Well, first of all, you didn't tell me how you were getting to Marbella to begin with, because the way I would do it is I'd start in Seville and take the Andalusian Express, which takes you all the way through to Malaga, and then you rent a car and drive along the coast to Marbella. Amazing stuff to do there, both in Seville and in Malaga, not to mention Marbella. The only thing, that I'll have a problem with is at the time of year you're going. Right now, it's the right time of the year. It's not out of control. It's not crowded. The weather's not oppressively hot or oppressively cold. And if you want to be on the water, now's the time to do it. But take some time in Seville if you can. And Marbella is a little bit overbuilt. I love driving down the coast into other little places, depending on how much time you have, into little places even like Puerto Banús. But start in Seville if you can. Here's one from Daria Pacosa who writes, we are booked on a river cruise, Viking, to Russia, Moscow to St. Petersburg. Well, you're not going to take the river cruise all that way, but I know what you're doing. In your opinion, how safe is travel to Russia? Tensions between Russia and the U.S. seem to be escalating daily. You know what? Travel is the great equalizer. I would have no trouble at all going to Russia, especially on a river cruise on Viking. Depending on the time of year, I hope you're going in June, July, and August. St. Petersburg is an amazing city with so many islands and so many museums. I've never seen a city with that many museums. It's staggering. But when you take the cruise on the riverboat, then you see amazing stuff in the Tsar's palaces on the water and the fountains. And you're doing it at a pace that makes sense. Literally, I have no trouble at all going to Russia at any time, unless it's February. Just thought I'd mention that. That's the tension for me, February. Nothing to do with politics. Tourism, I'm telling you, is the great equalizer. It's the bottom line in so many countries, and Russia is certainly no exception. Here's one from Maggie Robertson in Salisbury, Connecticut. And it says, my son is graduating from Naval Basic Training in June up in the Great Lakes. That's Great Lakes Naval Air Station, I believe. And we are looking for a place to stay to go see him. There are four of us, and we are looking for an affordable hotel in Chicago or right outside. Again, how many days do you want to spend, and how much do you want to drive? Because you don't have to stay in Chicago to have a great experience in Chicago. And at the same time, if you take a look at where the Naval Station is, you're very close to Wisconsin, either Milwaukee or Madison, and there's so many different places you can stay in, even Lake Geneva, if you want to look at it that way. So get back to me, Maggie. You have a little more time. It's not till June. Write me and tell me how many days and what your budget is, and we'll try to help you out, okay? Here's one from Darlene Seawall. I hope I pronounced your name right, Darlene. We're planning a trip to Paris in June and have found the cheapest nonstop flights from Boston to Paris or Norwegian Airlines. Would you recommend that airline? Well, it's not Norwegian Airlines. It's actually called the Norwegian Air Shuttle. They are exploding as an airline in terms of routes to the United States and from the United States and around the world. They're flying on brand new Boeing 787 Dreamliners. I have to tell you, it's and their price, as you already noticed, is great. I mean, take a look at this. Los Angeles to Stockholm on any other airline is about a $1,600 coach ticket round trip. You know what it is on Norwegian round trip? $600 on a brand new Dreamliner. And if you want to go business class, it's like $1,000, which is less than the other airlines' coach tickets. They've just inaugurated some amazing flights, even from London to South America. But if you're going to go from Boston to Paris, is what you're saying, you know what? I would fly them. And remember, you're not on for the rich Corinthian leather, but a 787, by the way, and it's only about a seven-hour flight, a 787, what the Boeing engineers have done, they designed it so that it's pressurized at only 5,000 feet, not 8,000 feet. And that makes a huge difference in how you feel when you get off the plane. Also, if you've not been on a Dreamliner before, check out the window seat. Check out the size of the window. I've never seen an airline window this big, and it automatically tints based on the light outside. So you're not going to get blinded by opening the shade, because there is no shade. It just does it. And you walk off that plane after a seven-hour flight. I've done an 11-hour flight from Los Angeles to Tokyo on a 787, and I came off the plane like, wow, this is cool. No problem at all. So check them out, and the price is right. But remember, you're paying for certain things, like luggage and food, so budget accordingly. But in terms of the actual cost of the ticket and the seat, I enjoy it. Back with more from Mazatlan as Peter Greenberg Worldwide returns right after this.
Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from Mazatlan, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. You email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. As I've been talking about through the entire show, you know, I've been coming to Mazatlan for, well, I hate to do the math, but since 1973, you do the math. When I first came down here, the food was basic and not very interesting. Seafood was always great, but now we're dealing with the gastronomic explosion here. And my next guest knows a little bit about that. For the last, what, 6 or 7 years, he's been the chef at the Presidio. You're from Mexico City, but now Mazatlan is essentially home for you, and it's Diego Becerra. How are you, sir?
Hi, how are you?
Good. I mean, you heard my introduction. I mean, sourcing food has changed so much in Mexico. You can get anything now, right?
Yeah.
And you can experiment, and you can be cutting edge, and it's not just enchilada.
That's right. Yeah.
I bet you don't even have an enchilada at your restaurant.
I don't.
See, I knew that, didn't I?
I don't, but I do.
You do a mean quesadilla.
I do. I do.
I was just guessing.
No, okay. No. The thing is, a lot of chefs want to make the Mexican food very upscale and nice and beautiful. And
but you're more about street food.
Yeah. That's the whole deal. For me, Mexican food is street food, and that's where the big flavors are in Mexico. So we do try to scale it up.
Give
a little
me an
bit.
Example of street food that you love.
For me, the taco is the and not the hard shell taco that you guys get in the north, which I love, but it's not what we do in Mexico. The taco has, I don't know, 1,000 varieties, and it is a very crazy thing when you put it in your mouth. That there are so many flavors, so many ingredients. And it's, I mean, in the restaurants, they give you a basic thing, and then you customize it. Every taco is...
So basically, it's Diego's custom taco shop.
Yeah. Well, there's more than that. There's a lot more than tacos. I mean...
I know, we're just talking about tacos.
But yeah, but taco for me is the most important meal that you can get in Mexico.
But when you talk about all those flavors, let's go back and talk about that. You talk about a fish taco, for example, right? Tell me what's in that.
Well, the fish taco, there's two things that are to a fish taco. The fish, very fresh ingredient. It has to be an amazing fish. It's the
and you can get that here.
You can. And the cover of the fish, what's it called?
The skin?
No, the you put it in flour and you it's the
it's not the head.
No, I forget the what you do in it. Like when you the batter.
Well, it just
went away. Sorry.
The batter, I got it.
Yeah, the batter. The batter has to be crispy and it has a lot of thing to it. Those two things, if you get those two things right, then the only thing you need is a tortilla and good sauces. Like, and that's the whole deal about that taco.
Now, one of my favorite dishes, you can laugh at me if you want, is almejas chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
right?
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
How do you do them?
For me, they have to be raw and still moving.
See, I'm a big raw fish guy,
yeah.
but raw shellfish.
Yeah.
But you can also do it with garlic.
Yeah, of course. You can cook them in white wine and butter and a little garlic. But for me, I mean, if you don't squeeze lime on it and it moves, for me it means it's not fresh. It has to move. And then you eat it and it's amazing, yeah.
And yet, of course, what's contradictory about that for most of my listeners, if they're coming out of Mexico and they see something moving, they ain't going to eat it.
Yeah, well, there's a little risk in Mexico, street food, yeah.
But my rule of thumb, whether it's street food in Mexico or street food in Bangkok, is if it's cooked, you can eat it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's less risk, yeah. I mean,
and the other caveat is, if you want a soft drink, don't have ice.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, don't do it.
Don't do it, yeah.
But other than that, I've never been sick because as long as it's cooked, I'm in.
And most people that have street food, there are street food vendors, that everything's fresh. They don't have like a huge kitchen where they can store stuff. So
it's got to be fresh.
Yeah, most of the people, they go to the market, buy their stuff very early in the morning, and you're eating. They make enough so they run out at noon.
We're talking to Diego Becerra, the chef at Presidio. But it's not just seafood. You're known for your pork shank.
Yeah.
Explain how you do that.
Well, that is something that I love barbecue. I love the real barbecue, the southern United States
barbecue.
So
you're doing a lot of marination.
Yeah. I rub it like anybody else, and then I barbecue it for 14 hours, very slow, smoked. And then afterwards, I make dried chiles and red wine sauce.
See, now, I finally learned the secret to barbecue. Can I tell you my secret to barbecue? Okay. Let's say you want to do barbecue ribs, right? You marinate them for 3 or 4 hours. Then you bake them at 250 degrees for just 20 minutes on a side. And then you throw it on the barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
And that way, they're not going to just sear on the outside and be raw on the inside. It's now it's like you're slow cooking. Yeah.
It sounds a little Asian, oriental.
Okay,
that's how they do it. Yeah, but
but it works.
Yeah, it does. They're amazing, the Asian style.
But when
ribs.
You rub it, it's all in the rub. So what are you rubbing that pork shank with?
Well, spices, paprika, garlic. But for me, the smoke and the slow cooking, the low and slow thing. That's the way. That's what works. I mean, most of the flavor comes from the wood, and the meat.
And the kind of wood too.
Yeah.
Exactly. Diego Becerra, the chef at Presidio.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me, man.
No, my pleasure.
A great food experience when you come to Mazatlan. Yeah. Thank you again.
No, thank you.
And that music means we're out of time for the whole show. Lots of people to thank. Our chief producer, Dara Stone. Our chief engineer who came all the way down to Mexico, Mike Worrell. Jeff Ryder doing the boards back in Connecticut. And Jerry Tanaka, who came from New York to help us out, too. We really appreciate it. We'll see you next week, everybody, from a different location somewhere around the world. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.